Hello and welcome to the Imprint Weekly Podcast. I'm John Kelly, senior editor of The Imprint, a daily news site covering child welfare and youth justice around the country. You can read all of our coverage at imprintnews.org or check us out on Facebook or Twitter at The Imprint News. You can sign up on our homepage for our free weekly and monthly newsletters. And for professionals in child welfare and youth justice, subscribe to our Youth Services Insider section for a closer look at news on business policy and practice. The Imprint Weekly Podcast is also a member of the Safe Camp Audio Network. You can check out our show page and all of Safe Camp's other great podcasts at safecampaudio.org on the web, at Safe Camp Audio on all social media. On this week's episode, we are joined by Carolyn Travis, Community Advocacy Coordinator for California Youth Connection. It's one of the oldest advocacy groups focused on child welfare issues in the country. It might be the oldest. Travis joined us to talk about the Supervised Independent Living Program in California. It's often just referred to as SILP. It's the most popular option for older youth who choose to remain in extended foster care in the state. So Travis wrote an op-ed for us about the SILP program and its kind of up and downs in terms of funding allocations from the state recently. And something that she wrote in there that we worked on in the editing process caught my eye, and that's why I wanted to have her on. She described her use of the SILP in a way, well, I don't want to spoil the conversation, but really basically at the end of the day, I kind of realized through working with her that given the right situation in terms of affordable housing or free housing, especially through college campuses, she was able to take her SILP payments and save up and be ready when she graduated from college to enter the world with some savings. Kind of really made me realize, you know, if we have in California with the SILP or different devices in other places, you know, that's really served as a sort of guaranteed income before that became like the kind of cool trendy thing to dry out. SILP has been around for more than a decade now. So anyway, Travis joined us to talk about her own experience with the Subsidized Independent Living Program and how she succeeded after foster care. She talked to us about this big boost that SILP got in last year's budget in California that's sadly on the chopping block already, and what else California Youth Connection has their eye on in this year's legislative process. We also talked briefly at the end about the issue of movement, either within a state or around the country when it comes to foster youth. I'll let you listen for yourself, but I asked Travis whether she thinks anyone typically alerts foster youth to other opportunities in terms of places to live that might be more affordable or where there might be certain job opportunities. And, you know, her response made me think that when moving is brought up to foster youth, it's often in a harsh way, like, hey, if it's too expensive here, just move. What can you do? As opposed to actually educating somebody on the many options one has in an enormous country with freedom of movement. So, all right, without further ado, here is our conversation with Carolyn Travis of California Youth Connection. All right, we are joined by Carolyn Travis, Community Advocacy Coordinator for California Youth Connection. The Imprint published an op-ed from Carolyn earlier this year about budget plans in California that could threaten to roll back recent increases for the Supervised Independent Living Placements, often referred to just as SILP, to older youth in foster care. And I wanted to have Carolyn on to talk a little bit more about, you know, the process, how it works with SILP and everything, kind of with the bird's eye view that she has both as an advocate and somebody who's experienced foster care in California. So Carolyn, thanks for joining us on the Imprint Weekly Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Standard rules on our podcast, Carolyn, you got to tell them a little bit of something about yourself before we get into the serious stuff. So I'm going to give you the categories. You got to give me at least one favorite. They are TV show or movie, musical group, sports team, or book. You only have to give me one. You can give me all five if you want. Carolyn, what do you got?
Okay, this is going to be hard. So I am a huge young adult sci-fi and fantasy nerd. I love reading. So I am like sorting through like at least 10 different books right now. But I would say one of the most recent I had been really into is called An Ember in the Ashes. And it's pretty much about a young girl, Leia, who, you know, her brother gets taken from her. And so she takes on the role as a spy to infiltrate this academy and really try and seek her brother's freedom. And so I think that book for me was very, very action oriented, very women centered and empowering to just like seeing representation in the YA sci-fi and fantasy world of women doing awesome things. And so I would say that's my favorite so far. And I don't watch too much TV, but currently I am watching the Batwoman series on HBO Max.
Didn't even know that was a thing. Good. See, I learn a lot from these recommendations in that book. Really sounds like it's got some subtle, you know, foster care, family separation undertones into it, right? Sibling stability, things like
right.
that. Okay, so we can get to what has happened with the budget and spending on this down the line in the conversation. But Carolyn, I just wanted to start by giving listeners kind of this real bird's eye view of how a young person experiences and can use this SILP in California, because I definitely learned a lot from you as we were kind of working on this op-ed, and I appreciate you being willing to share your experience, your own personal experience. I promise we won't get too personal here, but I think right before I just start that, for listeners, especially those not in California, I think most of our listeners are aware that over the last decade or so, a lot of states have extended foster care. We used to mostly just push kids out that didn't have another form of permanency. They would just get pushed out at 18. Good luck, and not much support after that. Now, most states have some form of way where kids can stay in until they are not kids. Young adults can stay in until they are 21. And California was an early adopter of that. SILP, the Subsidized Independent Living Placement. Would you say, fair to say it's the most popular? There's about 3,000 older foster youth that live in it. Of the extended foster care options, safe to say it's the most popular?
Yes, absolutely. I would say it's the most widely used, especially considering that other transitional housing supports, such as THP, which is transitional housing programs, or THP Plus for older youth, are really like heavily waitlisted because of the high need for housing. And so SILP is something that goes directly to young people. And so it's able to be utilized immediately.
Yeah. In a very and just if we're way. All being real about how we were at 18, you get to live alone. You get to be, you don't really have anybody really controlling you. Some young people might want that or need that, right? And so transitional housing is good for that. Or you can stay in a foster home, I guess, if that in California, if that works for you. California is actually one of the states that does not let residential care, like group homes, are not, that doesn't fly. Some states do allow that. So let's turn to you here. Mm-hmm. So you turned 18 in 2016. Let's start a little bit before that. Let's take it back to like 2014, 15. You're a teenager. I'm sure you're thinking about what comes next for you after high school. Where were you living at the time? You know, what were the options that you were thinking through? And I think an important piece of this, who, if anybody, was really helping you think about that? Who are you relying on in your life to think this all through?
So I would say during my high school years, it was a very tumultuous time. So I entered CARE again in 10th grade. And so during that time, right, you're like 1 year away from SATs. You're also, you know, another year away from college applications. And so at the time, prior to me aging out, I was very much having to deal with a lot of court cases, attending children's court, which was really disrupting a lot of just like being able to go to school and pursue my education. And so it was juggling a lot of different pieces. So honestly, the only kind of thought in the back of my mind, I need education as my route to make it out of these very hard circumstances. And I was absolutely thinking about going to college. My two sisters, who are 4 years older than me, were already in college. And so I thankfully did have some of that support, as well as support through my school and my counselors and my teachers. However, it was very much housing first and thinking through the daily navigation of foster care. And as I got closer to high school and graduation, it then became more of a pressing matter of thinking through what my college years and my 18 plus years would look like.
Interesting. So you got, that's a lot to go on when you're 16, 17 years old. You're going to court related to your case, related to your status in foster care. You're taking the SATs, you're applying to college, right?
Applying
out,
to multiple colleges, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then still thinking about like, okay, where am I going to live? I would assume that the hope was I'll get into a college where I can live on campus.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That was the plan.
Okay. So you got your sisters it sounds like you guys are still tight, close, but I think this is an important piece of this. Obviously we're talking about a support that connects older foster youth to a living support, like fiscal support for living. And there's other ones for going to college. Like you've got a caseworker, I'm assuming at least one. Is that person, you know, helping you understand this stuff? Who is helping you to kind of see here's what might help you along this path?
Yeah. So I did have a caseworker prior to my last year in high school. I had another placement change. And so really, as I started getting, I actually left for college at 17. And so as I was getting prepared to leave, a big support was one of the ILP coordinators I had, as well as just like the Guardian Scholars program at UCLA. They really assisted me in being able to enter the dorms early before the fall session had started, since I was leaving my placement early. And so there was some support. I wouldn't say there was concrete support tying everything together in like what would be a smooth transition. I would say it was a lot of like separate pieces, you know, me talking with my sister talking to the Guardian Scholars program and trying to just like make a plan that my social worker wasn't entirely helpful or involved in.
See that? So, you know, you hear that so often from foster youth that, oh, you know, like, it's actually kind of surprising that you didn't, when I asked that, you didn't come back and be like, actually, I had 10 caseworkers, you know, in a year. But because like a lot of people experience that. But I guess my question off of that is like, how SILP is just this acronym. And so like people who know like policies, including you now know, it's like, oh, well, that's a person that would definitely qualify for SILP and for Chafee educational training vouchers. So that would be the way that they would get into adulthood successfully. But how, if you don't have a caseworker who's like on it and really helping you, how did you even come to know about SILP? Like who was the first, like who told you, oh, you could qualify for this?
Yeah. So that was my social worker. My social worker did change. eventually the one I got close to like aging out was putting the paperwork in order, right, for SILP. And so, you know, she would just like be like, all right, like sign this, do this, right? And processing that. I also did have the privilege of having, and I was part of the Individual Transitional Skills Program, ITSP. And so I had an individual kind of like support and mentor who was helping me get all of my vital documents. And so that was like my birth certificate, my passport, a lot of the things that you need from the county, right? Because the county has your birth certificate. And so I thankfully had him as like a mentor, and he was also making sure that I was getting connected to like the proper resources and plan post transitioning out.
That's really awesome. So who, I apologize if you said it and I missed it, but where did that person come into your life from? Was that a Guardian Scholar person or?
No. So this was actually my sister somehow found this program. And then the coordinator, he contacted me. I was in 12th grade. So he contacted me. He was like, hey, there's this program. If you'd like to like be a part of it, we can help you get, you know, all of these vital documents and just help you with your transitioning out process. And so it was just a random call that I ended up getting. And I was like, yeah, sure. And so that's kind of how that got started, like within the year before I aged out.
Yeah. Which is like great that that happened to you. Very lucky that you have some cool ass sisters that can look out for you. And, but a little bit, you know, like, man, so that should just like, that shouldn't everybody get that? Right. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's not the reality. A lot of folks, depending on county as well, what county they are in, don't have the same type of funding for ILP or for transitional supports. And they also don't have the access to the same type of programs. And so It's very discombobulated.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, you get into UCLA, you're a Bruin, mm-hmm. you get on this campus. And now here's the thing that I learned from you during the editing process on your op-ed is I really thought of SILP as very, very lashed to where you are living right that minute. Like, you go out, I found this apartment. Okay, that's cool. Here's a check for the rent for that apartment. And mm-hmm. I clearly was mistaken because I really learned from your description. Like, it sounded like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, once you're able to get on campus and you're living in a dorm, I guess, mm-hmm. you are still getting SILP support and you're able to actually save some of that money for presumably when you get out, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So SILP covers, it's like basic financial assistance for all types of needs. So that's housing, that's food, clothing, any basic living needs or necessities that foster youth have, any of that money can go towards just their basic provisions. And so during my 18 to 20 year age range, I was in the dorms on campus. And so I was able to utilize those funds to just cover any basic needs that I didn't have being met through other means, mm-hmm. as well as save a little bit, you know, for a rainy day, which would surely come. So I think that's kind of like a guaranteed income, like type of style support, because you can really use those funds for whatever it is that you have, whatever your needs currently are or will be.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you're able to, you know, you've got some costs. I'm assuming, were you able to connect to the Chafee voucher as well while you're at UCLA?
Yes, thankfully I was. And so I was able to get some scholarships to cover a lot of my tuition expenses and just, you know, manage just that higher educational playing field.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And then you mentioned, you know, times certainly would get tough. They got tough for everybody, but I don't know if anybody had a weirder time during the pandemic than people were just like graduating into it. So that happened to you. You probably graduated like 4 months in, like probably nobody could go to like a graduation ceremony. That's such a crappy experience. I'm sorry. What did you guys do? Was it like virtual?
I didn't have any graduation ceremony, but my sisters threw me a party in the park. And so I did my own mock graduation.
Good. Well deserved. So like, as you wrote in your op-ed, you graduate into this, you know, void where that was really the height of it. That summer was like, is this economy about to go off a cliff? Everybody's like kind of not hiring. Even if you could get hired, you can't even really go outside your house very often, especially in LA where you were. And you were able to kind of survive off of the savings you'd accrued through the SILP, right?
Yes. So my SILP ended when I turned 21. So that was, I think, a year before I graduated. So that was, I think, around 2023. Oh, wait, no, sorry. I got my numbers wrong. I graduated 2020. So that was around 2019. My bad. So I had been able to also receive some assistance through my scholarships. And so I was just very intentional about saving as much as possible. And unfortunately, that's discouraged a lot of times because of the $10,000 asset limit that puts stipulations on how much assistance you can receive. And
yeah, let's stop on that for a second, because we'll talk about a law that's been introduced about that in a second here. Mm-hmm. But just so people understand what you're talking about, if you're a ward of the state, which is a gross term, but you know, mm-hmm. If you're in foster care,
yeah,
you can still qualify for all kinds of public benefits and fiscal supports as long as you don't basically have $10,000 or more in the bank. You have to keep your assets low to qualify. And then it's like this weird thing where at $10,001, all of a sudden, you know, everything goes to heck and you can't get all these benefits, right? That's basically how it works.
Yeah. So there is, as part of like the federal stipulations, that if you have more than $10,000 in property or asset limits, so like say you have a car and they think it's worth $4,000, right? Mm-hmm. And you have $6,000 in the bank saved, then technically the state or the county can say, well, you have enough money already, or you are past this limit, so we are going to cut off services for say SILP or whatever welfare services you're receiving at the moment. So it kind of makes it very difficult for youth to really thrive when we know for a fact that a lot of foster youth do not have any family support. They do not have any means to really have a social safety net. And so having this economic buffer, is critical so that when they do stop receiving support at 21, they are able to still buy themselves some more time as they continue to get their education and look for livable wage jobs, which are very hard to find. They can continue to support themselves and stay stable in their housing and their basic necessities.
Before I was adopted, I felt like my life was already over.
My biggest fear was that I would age out and not know how to be sufficient on my own.
At a certain age, like, they don't want you, you're troubled and stuff.
The clock is ticking for the more than 125,000 kids waiting to be adopted from foster care. Help the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption prevent them from aging out without a permanent family. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
So actually, let's stay on that subject first, and then we can get to the SILP stuff. But there's a bill that's been introduced that essentially would get rid of that, right? Like that in California, that limit would be lifted, and you as a foster youth, not now, but people who are in foster care now, mm-hmm. would be able to kind of build asset bases well above $10,000 and still be eligible for the support they deserve as foster youth.
Yes. So currently AB 2477 is being uplifted by Zabur's office. And what that would do, what that essentially is saying is youth who come in, right, they're receiving services at 18, that they would not, once they are determined to be qualified for those services, there would be no reassessment of their eligibility for those services in regards to how much money they have saved. So say they come in to SILP at 18 with only like $400, right? Already they have qualified and they're entering into extended foster care. Say they manage to save $11,000 in the next 2 years because of scholarships and utilization of their SILP payments, they would not be disqualified and would still be able to continue receiving that temporary support up until they turn 21.
Right. So it really is. It's basically, it kind of focuses the asset test, if you will, on the front end, like when they turn 18, and right. not continuously look at that. Yeah. Okay. Right. That makes mm-hmm. sense. And so that's been introduced and kind of moving along right now through committees. Okay. So let's get back to SILPs then. We have talked about Carolyn's experience with them, what she was able to do. Let's talk now about how much support comes to foster youth through this. So when California extended foster care officially in 2012, the SILP was worth $799 per month, which I have no idea why they picked that instead of 800. It's very arbitrary and weird, but $799 per month. It got up to as high as $1,129 per month. And then why don't you explain for listeners, because you'll do a better job than I will, what happened with SILP last year that in your view is a huge deal, and what's gone on since then in this budget round?
Yes. So last year, Governor Newsom made a promise to foster youth to really boost this SILP supplement so that the SILP payments, monthly payments, can really keep up with the price of rent. And so Governor Newsom signed into law that he would pass this SILP supplement, which would pretty much increase the monthly SILP payments by whatever the fair market value of housing was for the county that the youth was residing in. So for LA specifically, for example, that would mean that instead of getting the flat rate across the state, which was $1,129, the young person would get closer to about $2,022 estimated because of the cost of living and how high the rental prices are in LA. It would really be meeting the needs better and being more up to date with inflation, with current rental market prices so that it would mitigate a lot of the issues of homelessness that youth were still experiencing, even despite having the SILP supplement. So after that was in the summer pass, and then the most current budget proposal that the governor released would pretty much do away with the SILP supplement that he initially promised. And so that would cut about $18.8 million in funding to the SILP program and really leave us back to square one without this SILP supplement. Out of all of that, many advocates, right, and folks with lived experience have been pointing out just that backtracking this initial supplement that was promised would have a lot of harmful effects, specifically in youth facing homelessness. So that's a little bit about kind of like what the context of what policies and what budget proposals so far we've seen as of now.
Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, why this is so important is you've heard Carolyn's experience. She was able to get onto a college campus and thus use her SILP for things other than housing in that time frame. There are other teenagers who have to make that SILP work for them on a living rental basis right away. And so there may be some places in California where $1,129 gets you an apartment, gets you part of an apartment, maybe even a little bit left over to save or to use for other things. In Los Angeles, there's no chance. There's no chance. Like $1,000, you know, nothing you'd want to live in or probably feel safe in, right?
Right. Yeah. That's like probably like 3/4 or even half of a rental unit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll post a link in the show notes to this, but another advocacy group out there in California, J-Bay, put together kind of a good explainer last year on this delta in some of the very high cost counties. And I remember, I think her name was Yuki Wong, was one of the examples where she was telling them, you know, like, yeah, okay, I do rent a place in San Francisco, but I'm like a young pregnant mom, like soon to be mom, and there's like cockroaches running across my floor. It's really bad. You know, it's no way to live. What's your sense of like why this is on the chopping block? Is this just straight up like states got budget troubles, so we're cutting everything? Or has there been some pushback like that this was not the right way to increase spending on foster care? Or like, what's your sense of it?
You know, I think child welfare as a whole has really centered around this practice of historically and currently of making decisions without fully contemplating their consequences or really understanding their impact from those who would be directly impacted by those decisions. And so SILP is actually something that young people themselves advocated for in 2010 at the Capitol to pass AB 12 and to extend foster care to 21. And SILP was part of that bill and that extension. And so this is a program that foster youth themselves created. And we're saying we need this as like a fundamental support. And so I think when we think about how we are utilizing the budget to the highest optimization, a lot of times those who are impacted by these policies in child welfare are not at the table, and these decisions are being made without any regards to their impact. And so it leaves this huge gap, right? Because now we finally have some common sense housing support, direct, tangible housing support that goes directly to young people for them to utilize whatever way fits their needs the best. And that's now being uplifted as something that can be cut, when in reality, it cannot be cut whatsoever, because this is the only supplement that has actually made a tangible impact in preventing homeless outcomes in the future. So many studies have tracked how much this support of having even just extending foster care to 21 has made. And it has really shown, the numbers have shown that the longer a youth is in extended foster care, the more likely they are to be able to transition out successfully and not experience chronic homelessness or have these poor outcomes that we were seeing prior to these supports being in place. We are still seeing a lot of poor outcomes, but this supplement has effectively prevented and supported in the prevention of homelessness and a lot of the intersecting outcomes that come with that.
I'm going to ask maybe a bit of a spicy question here, and I'll preface this by saying I don't think where I'm going with it negates the need or rationality for increasing the SILP rate or pegging it to the fair market. You went to UCLA. Did you grow up in LA?
I did grow up in LA, yes.
You grew up in LA. So you've lived there your entire life. Mostly.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think more people should be, and I guess by people, I mean, you know, adults in their lives, should be more candid about the alternatives to staying put with foster youth? I think the reason I say it is like, I'm an adult now. I lived in DC with my then girlfriend, now wife. We left. I mean, DC is so, it's like LA, you know, it's super expensive. We looked at the reality of our situation, and part of the calculus, we decided to move. I live in Detroit now. You know, a pretty good part of that was we're never going to be able to kind of do much more than rent a small apartment here. You know, let's go somewhere we can afford to buy a house maybe someday, or just have a better quality of life on the salaries that we're reasonably going to have. And I just wonder if anybody ever talks to foster youth in your experience about, like, you know, there are other places you could go where you'd pay less and maybe be able to save more, because everybody should have the right to stay. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like it's something everybody should be at least thinking about. And I just have no idea who would be advising foster youth about that bigger world out beyond the county they're in that situation.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment that you bring up, because I think when you look at things from the perspective of housing as a human right, say that some youth do, right? Some youth are forced to move out of state. They are experiencing this forced misplacement. It's kind of like gentrification in a way, right? Because the market prices for rent have skyrocketed, so that really only people who make maybe 80K or more can afford. And even if youth are moving out, they're leaving behind the communities that they grew up in. They're leaving behind their social support systems. And that's going to have a huge impact on their mental health, their physical health, as well as the chances of how likely it is that they even are able to thrive and be happy in the place that they were forced to move to. So even if, say, someone is saying, well, if these SILP rates don't keep up, then there's alternative options to housing. There's actually not, because at the end of the day, you're still being faced with the same problem, that these rental prices are too high and youth aren't being paid a livable wage. And so even if by any means young people are able to be resourceful and move out of state, which is extremely stressful, considering trying to get documentation, considering that not even with the current attacks on women's reproductive justice, that, you know, a young foster youth moving out of state might not even be able to experience the same rights as they do in California. So that kind of opens up this question of ethics. And is it really ethical to allow these rental prices and allow this housing crisis to continue when we know that housing is a human right for everyone? Youth should not be forced to migrate or move to another state simply because we haven't addressed those racial and historically exploitative conditions within our current systems and within our current housing market. So,
yeah, I think you pretty much identified the line, I guess, I was trying to kind of hone in on there, which is like there's a big difference between forcing somebody either by physically taking them and moving them, which we do sometimes with foster youth, or just pricing them out, you know, which is a much more subtle and kind of addictive way of doing it. And just simply presenting people with options and making them clearly understand the differences. And I agree with you wholeheartedly on the first part of that. You can't, it would have to be a situation where you're saying, like, we will provide you with the fair market support to live where you have been, and want to make sure that you understand the many options that are out there for you. But I do agree with you on that. Okay, we've covered SILP really well. Thank you for kind of breaking down this stuff and like sharing your personal story again, kind of as a way to illustrate this. What else does California Youth Connection have their eye on right now outside of what we've been talking about? What else is kind of on your guys' radar?
So currently we are really rallying around SILP, around the Housing Navigation and Maintenance Program, which is also experiencing proposed cuts by the governor's office, as well as FERS, which is the Family Urgent Response System. And that is pretty much a mental health 24/7 crisis unit that is able to work specifically with foster youth, with their families, to help mitigate and problem solve any conflicts that might be coming up, any challenges they might be experiencing, or support that they need in their mental health. And that program really helps mitigate the use of law enforcement. As we know, law enforcement is not an ideal responder to mental health crisis. And a lot of times mental health has been criminalized and it's fueled mass incarceration simply because people are struggling and there is not an appropriate response and empathy to what they are facing. And so those three programs are really under fire and are something that we will be advocating for at the Capitol with the budget subcommittee hearings that are coming up in April. And additionally, on top of that, overall, our membership and the foster youth we work with have uplifted a lot of different issues. So we do have five statewide priorities, and those include system accountability, housing, placement, safety, and culture, foster youth rights, and transitional resources and support.
Carolyn Travis, Community Advocacy Coordinator for California Youth Connection. Thanks for joining us on the Imprint Weekly Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Carolyn Travis, Community Advocacy Coordinator for California Youth Connection, for joining us today. The Imprint Weekly Podcast is a production of the Safe Camp Audio Network, which is a division of Fostering Media Connections. Please visit safecampaudio.org on the web or at safecampaudio on all major social media. This podcast is produced and mixed by Christine Onjoko, with music by Luke Giroux and Cyrus Elia. If you enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you consider subscribing or giving us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. And we would greatly appreciate if you would consider supporting our work here on the podcast and in print. Small donations from our listeners and readers go a long way towards helping us grow and cover more great stories of child welfare and youth justice. To support us, it's very easy. Just visit imprintnews.org/donate. You can follow The Imprint on Twitter and Facebook by searching the handle @TheImprintNews and visit us on the web at imprintnews.org. You can always get us over email at tips@imprintnews.org. I'm John Kelly, and we'll see you next week.